Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Just when you thought it couldn't get any worse in the story of Pastor J.P. Miller and his family. Oh, it does. Oh, my God. There's been allegations against J.P.'s dad for years. We've known about that. There's been allegations against J.P. for a long time. And there's Are we following along? What's the trend we're seeing here? Like father, like son. Like father. JP, by the way, is dad, unfortunately. I know, he had children. Like son. That's what a lot of people are saying and thinking now that they're learning about JP's own children, or at least one of them, who's an adult, who looks creepily like JP, who seems to have, according to allegations in a 911 call made by Micah Miller, possibly some of the same proclivities as dad and grandpa. Surprise. I know that never happens. Again, allegations. Let's get into the family story of the Millers, shall we? February 7th of 2024, a woman calls 911 from a gas station in Florence, South Carolina. She asks the dispatcher to send someone to her own house because uninvited people are inside and two laptops in there have intimate photos of her on them. She says something to the dispatcher that the dispatcher probably was not expecting. Her husband's son, she says, hit her in her kitchen the other day without her husband there. She told him it wasn't appropriate, or hit on her, I should say. Hit on her in her kitchen the other day without her husband there. She told him it wasn't appropriate, and she told him to get out. She texted her husband about it afterward. She wants those laptops out of the house before anyone in that family gets to them, you know. Like your creepy son. 8 days later, she's on another 911 line. She's using her father's phone because she says her husband took hers. She wants an emergency pickup of her husband, not a 72-hour hold, because she says he's a flight risk. Then she starts talking about the son again. He allegedly, according to her husband, following her around town, she says, in his coastal painting truck, his business, decked out with a name on it. He rolled the window down when she rolled hers down. He's a felon, she says. He has guns. He's been living in the house she left. She says her husband tried to throat punch her. She says the whole family scares her. Fitz News published both those calls. The woman on those tapes, Micah Miller, She was 30 years old when she died on April 27th of 24. Two civil lawsuits filed in early 25 named two defendants, John Paul Miller and his father, Reginald Wayne Miller. Both lawsuits allege the same pattern across two decades. The complaints describe the Miller family's churches and school, in the complaint's own language, as a hunting area for underage females. The girls of those lawsuits were 14 and 15. Jane Doe number one is an Indiana woman. She alleges J.P. Miller forced himself on her in 1998 when she was 15 and he was 19. He was a youth leader and musician at his father's Cathedral Baptist Church. 25 years later, in 23, she confronted him in Myrtle Beach about what he'd done. The lawsuit alleges his response was five words: "No man is without sin and temptation." Then further suit, he assaulted her again. Jane Doe number two alleges JP assaulted her starting in 1999 when she was 14 at Cathedral Hall Academy, the school attached to the church. The lawsuit says the school met in a repurposed bowling alley with no certified teachers and no real coursework. When this girl reported what was happening to the teacher, she was sent to Reginald Miller's office. JP was already in the room. The lawsuit alleged the Millers called her a servant of Satan, told her she would be assaulted by demons, burned her Harry Potter book, and Reginald beat her with a Bible. Godly. Both suits allege JP openly admitted to misconduct with underage church members, an admission the complaints say was corroborated by multiple witnesses. JP denies every allegation. He countersued Jane Doe number one for slander and libel. No criminal charges related to those allegations have been filed against either man. Now, look at who the girl was sent to. She reported what happened in that system. She reported what happened and the system sent her to Reginald Wayne Miller's office. That happened because Reginald built the system. See, Reginald founded his first church in Florence, South Carolina, in 1972. Bible College by the mid-1970s. A morning TV show called Good Morning Jesus by the mid-1980s. He was running what was described as the largest charismatic church in eastern South Carolina. In 1987, the wives of two Bible College students accused him of making inappropriate advances on their husbands. In 1989, a local TV station aired a five-part investigation. Students described those advances: faces blurred, voices disguised. His ex-wife, Susan Miller, filed her own affidavit when she saw custody of their children in 2001. She says Reginald's obsession with power and control extended beyond his immediate family and into the church, where he engaged in inappropriate relationships with young men and women. No criminal charges were filed. The ministry packed up and moved from Florence to Myrtle Beach. The church changed its name. 2006, Reginald was arrested at a bathhouse at Myrtle Beach State Park, charged with lewdness and prostitution after he allegedly exposed himself to an undercover officer. He, George Michael, did. That charge went through pre-trial intervention and was expunged. On that Friday, on that February 15th call, Michael told the 911 dispatcher that JP's father was a registered offender. The public record does not support that. The bathhouse case was expunged, and the federal conviction is for labor fraud, which doesn't really put anybody on a registry, but it certainly says a lot about character. What Micah believed about that family and what the documents actually show are two different things, or what the law caught up to. Maybe that's more appropriate, are two different things. That distinction matters for everything that follows. A federal case landed in 2014. A grand jury indicted Reginald for labor and visa fraud through his Bible College. He'd recruited 16 foreign students with promises of employment and education. What they got was work, 30 to 56 hours a week at the college and at his house for little to no pay, with their immigration status held over them if they refused. Over $244,000 in documented violations. He pled guilty. The sentence, time served roughly 4 months behind bars, plus 3 years of supervised release and $75,000 in restitution. That restitution covered less than half of what was owed to the students and reportedly remains unpaid. After his supervision ended, Reginald left for Pakistan to do missionary work. Can't cut it in your own country? Pakistan is calling. Local church members there posted a video asking him to never come back. On August 12th of 2026, at 77 years old, Reginald pled guilty to receiving stolen goods in a South Carolina courtroom. He did it on the day his jury trial was scheduled. He lost both Jane Doe lawsuits by default because he never answered them, allegedly. When a reporter from Fitch News reached him by email, he questioned the 23 years of repressed memories in those lawsuits. He says he has nothing for them to take. JP, his son, founded Solid Rock Ministries in 06 and acquired his father's old Market Common property, a former Air Force base chapel, in 2013. At his peak, he controlled nearly $6 million in real estate and owned a private plane, allegedly. The Netflix documentary Death of a Pastor's Wife shows him preaching from the pulpit that a wife who doesn't meet her husband's needs commits a sin, and that if she doesn't comply, temptations will be placed in her husband's path. Micah met JP at his church, and a police report obtained through FOIA. Micah told an officer she had known JP since she was 10 years old, and that he had pursued her since she worked for him at Solid Rock, you know, when she was a ripe old age of 14. Most coverage of this case, including the Netflix documentary, says she was 13 when they met. She worked as the family's nanny. The relationship began, supposedly, when she was 20 and he was 35. Married with 5 children. They married in 2017. She found tracking devices on her car. She told police she was afraid for her life. We've been talking about this case. She told her sister Sierra in a statement Sierra later put under oath in a probate affidavit, if I end up with a bullet in my head, it was JP. She filed for divorce twice. In her final months, per Fitz News, FOIA of Horry County police records, Micah contacted police at least 14 times seeking help related to JP. 5 of those calls mentioned tracking devices on her vehicle. 2 days after serving divorce papers for the last time, she drove to Lumber River State Park in North Carolina. She was 30. Her death was ruled as S by 2 jurisdictions. JP announced it from the pulpit the next day and told the congregation not to discuss it. Don't talk about this in church. JP is now federally indicted for cyberstalking Micah and lying to investigators, not for causing her death. Prosecutors allege he contacted her as many as 50 times in a single day, placed tracking devices on her vehicle, and posted intimate photos of her online without her consent. He has pled not guilty. Of course he has, in true grandiose narcissist fashion. His defense has filed 6 motions for continuance, trials set for October of 26. Now let's go back to the document that ties these 2 generations together. Allison Williams, JP's first wife. 1 month after Micah died, Williams filed a sworn emergency custody affidavit in Horry County Family Court. She wanted her 2 youngest children out of JP's house, and she wanted a psychological evaluation before he got them back. In that affidavit, she states under oath that JP confessed something to her. He told her he had been inappropriate with several underage female members of their church. His explanation for what he had done was that he says was because those things had been done to him as a child for years. Allegedly at the hands of his own father, Reginald Wayne Miller. William says she went to the girls in 2015 and asked them to come forward. They were too scared of JP to go to police. The church's leadership allegedly knew. They asked JP to enroll in a program. They never completed it, and they kept him at the pulpit. That is the document linking father and son through JP's own reported words. The church that allegedly knew about both of them chose to offer a class instead of making a phone call to police. Now listen to what Micah told 911 about the next generation in the house. Logan Ryan Hardy, JP's oldest son. He doesn't use the name Miller. Wonder why. On January 7th of 2024, Horry County Police responded to a home on Hagwood Circle in Conway about 2:30 in the morning. They found a woman slumped against a wall, going in and out of consciousness. She had a laceration on her right hand and pain in her head and left shoulder. Police say Hardy hit her in the back of her head with a glass bottle after an argument, then fled. He turned himself in later that day at a Subway. eat fresh. He told police the woman had shredded his documents and he broke her computer in retaliation. He was booked into the J. Reuben Long Detention Center on a charge of first-degree domestic violence, a felony in South Carolina, and released the same day. Mike had called him a felon on the February 15th call. What the public record shows is a felony charge. The outcome of that case has not been located in public reporting more than 2.5 years later. Logan is not charged with anything close to what his father and grandfather face in those complaints. What he is, in Micah's own recorded voice on two published 911 calls, is the next person in that family who made her afraid. That's what we're looking at. He allegedly hit on her in her kitchen, hit on her, she says, when her husband wasn't home. And she told him to get out. He followed her across town in his painting truck, she says, and rolled the window down when she did. He was living in the house that she fled. And he had been charged with a felony, allegedly 5 weeks before that first call, for putting a woman in the hospital with a glass bottle in the back of the head. You know, like we've been saying, all these Jesus-y things they do there. Two men named in lawsuits alleging a pattern that stretches across churches and decades. One of them federally indicted for cyberstalking his wife through phones, trackers, and pavement, a 77-year-old who pled guilty to something else entirely on the day a jury was supposed to hear it, and a son charged with felony domestic violence whose painting truck shows up in a dead woman's 911 call. A church that has changed its name at least 4 times and moved cities at least once. Mercy Church is what they call it now. Susie Skinner leads worship. Her first husband, a quadriplegic Army veteran named Chris Skinner, drowned in September 2021 under what many consider somewhat suspicious circumstances. The death was ruled an accident. JP married Susie on June 1st of 25, about 13 months after Micah died. No criminal charges related to the allegations in those lawsuits have been filed against anyone in this family. The civil suit remains pending. No man is without sin and temptation, according to JP. The ministry Reginald Wayne Miller started in Florence, South Carolina in 1972 is still open. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. There's a lot more to come in this case, and we're going to keep bringing it to you. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's continue on in the weeks before her death, Micah Miller called 911 several times regarding GPS trackers on her car and stolen belongings, 14 times. Meanwhile, JP filed a mental health pickup order telling police she was bipolar and off her medications. JP really proactively told police that Micah was bipolar, schizophrenic, and having an episode to explain away her cries for help. Now, it's not to say that there couldn't have been actual, you know, mental health problems going on there. That could have existed. But when you look at the environment she was in, gee, I wonder what was exacerbating that. How common is it for a narcissist or a sociopath, abusers like this, to intentionally terrorize a victim in private, only to use that trauma response when they're out there? Hey, everybody, this isn't right, or they're reacting, to label them as crazy or unstable to authorities or friends or family or anybody looking in to make sure that nobody truly sees what's going on. And disturbingly, how successful are they typically in telling that tale?
I think there's a lot of this. It's probably underreported, but this You know, it would be, I was watching this, of course, thinking, boy, I'd love to look at all her medical records and what they documented in the hospital. And, you know, because you wonder, bipolar disorder is a pretty serious diagnosis. And one of the videos that apparently he had recorded, she did sound psychotic in what she was saying. But can trauma drive a person into a state like this when it's ongoing trauma, they feel trapped? I think there's evidence that that can happen, and it may look psychotic, it may look like bipolar disorder, but it can certainly be, you know, severe anxiety, depression, feeling trapped, hypervigilance, and, you know, for her to not submit to him meant that she was refusing to follow God or to love God. And so that's quite a double bind to be in. And could that exacerbate maybe somebody who had existing vulnerabilities? And I think she had vulnerabilities. And so there could have been, you know, an underlying mood disorder, bipolar condition, and the stress of this marriage triggered it and made it manifest.
Siobhan, could it also, because what's another interesting facet of this, not just her medical history, mental health history, which again, we've been covering so much of and learning so much about because of Lindsay Clancy, tragically, but he was really telling her so much, because like part of what I picked up also was every time he's having an interaction with someone, including the congregation, he's always focusing on his actions. It's like a bad 911 call when the perpetrator calls it in. You can always tell because they're not worried about the victim. They're worried about what their role was and what they were doing. Yeah. So they're creating their own alibi. He did that a lot throughout this. But part of that narrative, he kept preaching to everyone else. He was also preaching to her. So how can that also affect her own mental health if he's telling her she's bipolar and she's suggestible and he's the pastor, so I have to listen to him? I mean, he's telling her what she has to submit to sexually. Was it five times a day? This was the creepiest shit I've ever heard.
It's insane,
So could that also play into her? Can someone basically become bipolar or at least exasperated if someone continually tells you you are? Because he was doing that as well.
I would call it more a chronic PTSD response.
There you go. Right.
And that is where we've been talking a lot about mental hospitals and how good of a job do these programs do. I think if she was in a really good program where they spent enough time assessing her and really got into what is your lifestyle like and what are these symptoms like and how is this all correlated, that could have been picked up. That, you know what, there's really more of a trauma response going on here than bipolar. But it's really hard to know, and it's hard to know what the quality of care that she got was, unfortunately.
It'd be really interesting to see when he goes to trial, because again, I know he's not being charged with a death or anything, but I'll be interested to see what kind of searches they do on his computers and Google searches and things like that. It'd be really interesting because of all these things that it looks like he was doing intentionally. Did he research them? Was he thinking about them? I mean, I would be very curious on all these different aspects because he seemed to be doing things pretty intuitively that normal human beings wouldn't think of or even think of how to doing yet. He seemed to be pretty fluid with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody mentioned gaslighting. Off the chart. Yeah. Off the chart gaslighting here. Manipulating.
Another good definition.
Does a person who's doing this level of gaslighting and bullshit, did he want her back truly, or did he want to destroy her? What was the ultimate goal at the end of the day? Exactly what happened? I'm going to make life so hellish for her with the GPS trackers on the car, posting the nude photos of her online, tracking her in real time, telling everybody she's got this and that. And oh my gosh, it's just such a sad, horrible story. Is the ultimate goal, I'm going to drive her so mad she's going to go to the woods and do this? Or is it, I'm going to get to her so much that she's only going to turn back to me because I provide such a lovely home to live with and such a great partnership that she clearly will come back? I mean, is it a little above? I mean, do they even know? Do you think he even knows what the hell the goal is at the end of the day, other than he's just flailing in his histrionic way of look at me and here's what I want, me, but never really quite understanding where the next, you know, lily pad he's jumping to is?
Yeah, I think it can go both ways. Good question. There's obviously a need for power and control. and entitlement. He wanted to own her. I mean, she had his name tattooed on her body early on.
Yeah.
She belonged to him. In her wedding vows, she said something like, I wrote it down, 100% of what I am, I give to you. And then in his sermons were, a wife must show respect and honor. And so I think he liked, you know, apparently for quite some time, he succeeded in feeling like he owned her. And I think he kind of got a high from that. And so I'm just guessing, but I think he had a strong attachment to her and wanted her back. But if he couldn't make it work, as it was not working near the end, then I think it really was about, I'm just going to go after her and try to do what I can to destroy
her. Yeah, I wrote down their wedding vow when they said it. She said she will give 100% to him in all areas, even to make his dreams come true. His response, I won't try to best that.
Jesus Christ. Uh-huh. Oh,
so Siobhan, say he's unchecked. And this continues. He continues. He's on an arc. He's got a life arc on this. Where does it go if he's unchecked? Because the reason I'm asking is, does a guy like this then eventually say, you know what, this whole one wife thing just really isn't suiting me. I need more. I mean, does someone like this escalate into trying to get into FLDS or something like that? Because, I mean, in other words, would he ever be satiated in any way?
I think, you know, we see a pattern, right? And future behavior we can guess is based on past behavior. He really wants to be a preacher. He loves being in front of people. Apparently, even after, what is it, Solid Rock? Solid Rock Church. Sort of went defunct. He started a new one again, and he's got another wife. But we know he's so sexually compulsive, he's not going to be faithful to her, and this weird behavior is going to keep coming out. So my guess is he's just going to keep repeating. He likes having a woman under his thumb. And that's my best guess.
This is just pure conjecture, but the new wife, Susie, I believe, Susie Skinner, mm-hmm. I think. Take Micah out of the equation to a certain extent. I mean, just observing John Paul's behavior in general. I mean, who the hell is looking at this man going, I got to get me some of him? Like, he seems like quite the catch. I mean, it's just the life arc. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't understand what on earth is going through anyone's mind, a rational thinking human being's mind, to be like, this is my partner. I should stay with him. And maybe that's the answer. It's not a rational thought.
It's not rational.
Look at Sam Bateman. Sam Bateman got all those wives, but they felt,
I know.
You gotta be kidding me.
Well, I mean, that was under, I can understand Bateman even more because it's more of a cult dynamic in these people don't really know a world outside of, you know, that closed off community. These are people who live in the rest of the world and see the rest of the world. It's not like Susie hasn't had another life. I mean, right. Her, you know, quadriplegic husband dies in the pool under weird circumstances. I mean, I don't know. The whole damn thing
and
is
your,
weird.
And your pastor steals your wife.
Everybody looks at this like, oh, it's love. I mean, or that's what they expect people to think. I mean, is it really, Siobhan, when you look at someone like Susie and people that are still going to what's left of his church, are these people who are just, they're way too close to the sun, they can't see it? At some point, you just kind of go, well, you know, the ones who got out. These are the ones who they're too injured mentally to ever really see the light here. And unless someone intervenes, they're going to be another victim of his. Mm-hmm. Or they're just going to find the next charismatic mm-hmm. kook that comes along. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are the women that I think, you know, when you look at who could you make an impact here with some kind of therapy, those are the women that I think you could work with. It's like, because my guess is there's something in their past that has really impaired their judgment when it comes to what is love, what is a healthy relationship. They don't know. They don't know. And they're going to, you know, and being with a man like this, certainly, which we saw with Micah, you start to lose your mind after a while. You become anxious, depressed, hypervigilant. You get trauma symptoms. His sexual behavior alone would cause some unhealthy responses in a partner. And so those are the folks I would like to sit down with and really explore what is the attraction here and what is in your background that would make you feel like you're worthy of someone like this, because there's something there.
You know, there are coercive control laws in certain states, and hopefully that expands further as time goes on. A lot of people are looking at this doc. There's some insinuation in there of like, well, it's weird where the gun landed. And we can get into that a little bit. But at the end of the day, this, and I've examined this case for years, it does not look like he actually killed her. Like bang, bang with the gun or anything like that. Yeah. By all accounts, I mean, it's pretty well documented. It looks like she offed herself. Mm-hmm. I think that's an established fact in this case. It still doesn't make it any better. It's how she got there, though. I mean, not physically. She appears to have driven herself. She's on camera. But mentally, how she got there. We've seen cases where a teen has suggested to another teen who wanted to end their life, go ahead and do it. And they've been charged, I believe it's an accessory to the murder or something of that nature. When you don't necessarily have exactly that, you don't necessarily have, I mean, as far as we know on the record, him saying, yeah, go do this to yourself. Mm-hmm. But just the torturous behavior that leads someone there of like, I have no choice. I'm better off dead. Which seems to be kind of what she was thinking at the moment. Mm-hmm. Is that something we can ever truly go after? Because it seems this sort of torturous behavior that people do to each other. I mean, this is what we see on camera. This is what's documented. But I think a lot of us throughout our lives could look at people we've known or known and go, yeah, they've done that to people or they've been a victim of that. And it's just, it seems to be how life works for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Should that be something that is looked at closer? Should there be penalties for really, really horrible behavior that leads people down some of these paths?
I sure vote for that. How can we, and I know that there are lots of gray areas with how do you define coercive control? I mean, I call it a longstanding pattern of deceit, entitlement, exploitation, lack of empathy, and certainly this case fit all of those things. You've got the monitoring devices, the razor blades in the tires, the threats, the 50 phone calls in a day trying to harass her. We need better ways to intervene in that, because that kind of thing, I think, for a vulnerable person who's been told she's not mentally well, and to what degree was that this treatment that she was getting, or you know, was there an underlying mental health condition? We can't be sure. But we need to do a better job of, you know, I think police officers, they're not social workers. And can we embed more social worker? I mean, this is just my random idea. I don't know if anybody would think it was possible. But who, when there's this kind of complaint going on, can a social worker who's affiliated with the police department go out and spend time with the victim and really try to weigh through what is the evidence here? What are your options? And then get the law enforcement system to intervene sooner and to do more. And, you know, if he had spent a bit of time in jail for some of this behavior, it might have put a stop to it.
And that's a big problem here, because Micah made over a dozen 911 calls begging for help.
Yes.
But police frequently, and I mean, they're operating by the law here. I'm not trying to fault the police here.
No.
Police frequently treated the stolen property and the complaints and that as a civil matter because they were married. It's almost like if they weren't married, if they were strangers and he was doing this to her, there's more they could have done. Yeah. But because she said, I do, it was almost a free ticket to, you know, this insanity and to abuse, essentially. I mean, how often is this a factor in these cases where, because they're married, there's less the law can do about it?
I think traditionally it's been a factor, and it probably varies from place to place, from police department to police department, from city to county. How tuned in are they to this stuff? Mm-hmm. And certainly they need more training. But even if you train police officers well, I think most of them are well-meaning when they go out on these cases, but they're limited by what the law says they can do. And I still think you need a mental health person to come out and spend time with the person who's making the reports of the stalking. We've got to take stalking behavior seriously, that kind of monitoring, because it can lead to a lethal outcome. And the most dangerous time in a coercive, controlling relationship like this, which we can just say an abusive relationship, is when the victim is trying to leave. And that's when it escalates, and that's when it can get crazy. And we need to do a better job of protecting victims.
Yeah, they definitely weren't doing that when she put in for the protective order, and there was a delay on that, I believe. And so, Tony, what's the case? Kind of slipping my mind because we've been so focused on this one. We covered it the other day where the death of Tupac?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that charge was he didn't pull the trigger, but since he's in the car, he's able to be charged with murder. Do you actually, what was the statute he was actually be charged under that? Because I wonder if there's any like parallel you could do. In other words, he's part of it, but not part of it. I don't know.
Well, that's part of a conspiracy charge. I mean, this wouldn't be technically conspiracy because it's a
right.
totally different.
I know
because
I know it is, but I'm so with you because there should be some sort of culpability for this mental torture.
The federal charges seem to be reaching as far as they can reach because for whatever reason, it doesn't appear that any local authorities have exercised their reach of what they can do to him. So the Fed stepped in. Essentially it's a stalking charge. Yeah, I mean, that's where it's at right now. Not to say it couldn't get bigger, but a lot of times charges start somewhere and then kind of escalate from there in terms of investigation. I'm sure they're looking at all. I'd be very curious. We were talking earlier about the digital footprint. What exactly is he Googling?
Yeah.
You know, like because that'll tell so much. Like, what is his end goal? Is it like drive someone to end themselves? Or what is he searching for? And then following that playbook.
So it'll be interesting on that one too, is not just on the digital pattern, but also the purchase pattern. So he bought the tracking devices put on her car.
Yeah.
What's the likelihood that's the only car he's ever tracked? You know,
slim to nil.
Right. So I think they're going to really discover a lot about the pattern of his life. And so you have one stalking charge, you might wind up getting more.
I think you'd find probably a lot of people. That's my conjecture.
Control, control, control.
Does one of the big, I guess, one-ups that JP knew that he had on everybody, and a lot of people exercise this, whether they're a pastor or not, is the Jesus card. The fact that he was a pastor. John Paul is his name. JP. I see it in business a lot, especially here in the South where I live. You'll see crucifixes like worked into like signs, like Timmy's Plumbing, and it's a crucifix for the T or some shit like that. Those are usually the businesses I stay away from. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like when you're overtly using the cross as part of your marketing scheme, it seems to kind of go against most of what I think, you know, Jesus probably taught him. It wasn't like, use what I died on as part of your marketing scheme to get more money. Like, this just doesn't seem like it's part of the Bible.
Tony has a negative confirmation bias.
I do have a negative confirmation bias because every person in every business I've ever worked with that does that has been slimy as shit and has like really been some of the worst human beings I've ever worked with. And I'm sure there's probably lovely ones out there, but that's my negative confirmation bias. But feels like people like that really use that to an extreme and they get a pass. They get a pass from so many people who are just like, well, he's a pastor. He's on a cross. It's just like, don't question that because they're afraid what that might reflect on them if they question the pastor. I'm thinking JP used that to his advantage a lot here.
Oh, a lot. It's so manipulative. And the issue about is church a safe place? Are you safe, on so many levels with somebody who's broadcasting their Christianity? And I think I know we have a lot of viewers who are Christians. I get emails from folks. And I think there are healthy ways to be a Christian. And it can be a wonderful source of comfort for people. I don't want to knock it. It works very well for them. But there are toxic ways, and a toxic person can take and pervert something into something that's scary and abusive. You know, one of the things I'm always thinking about when I talk with my clients, and they're very religious, is their faith helping them, or is their faith diminishing them, building shame within them? Is it building blind obedience? Is it causing problems? Is it causing anxiety and depression? And then they're in this bind because they start not being able to feel their feelings, because that means they're disobeying God. If they acknowledge that, you know, maybe the pastor has done some bad things, but I can't criticize the pastor. I can't criticize the plumber with the bumper stickers all over his car. But there's a huge manipulative factor in that.
Yeah.
If you're afraid to do something because of fear, that's what you should get away from.
Yes.
It's pretty simple.
It's recognizing the signs and having a fear of speaking about it. It's like being on an airplane and seeing someone with a knife, and they're acting a little. But I don't want to disturb anybody. I don't want to disturb the stewardess or the captain or say, hey, this is over here. It'll be a fine flight. It'll be good. I'm not going to say anything because everybody's on the plane. We're always trying to get where we're going, right? The guy with the knife over here is not. You know, it's like saying, I don't like American Airlines. Why? Because of 9/11. Well, the 9/11 hijackers were not employees of American Airlines. They hijacked the airplanes. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. It's being able to recognize the people who are trying to hijack something that is good, that has a purpose, mm-hmm. that does good things, and using it for their own twisted reasons. We need to be able to identify that sort of shit and not just go along with it because we want to, you know, enjoy the flight. Well, sometimes some people don't, and they need to be called out for it. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to break down Death of a Pastor's Wife on Netflix right now, the story of John Paul Miller and Micah Miller.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to spinquest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, guys. Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps.
head on over to spinquest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at spinquest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.